This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, that's hour number three, and we've got one of my favorite guests, Russell Baxter, is going to join us in this hour. We're going to talk some NFL with him. He really knows how to break down games and what he saw and in ways that are just unique. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him about some of his observations from week one. Maybe there is a X and O reason to the Saints' success against Aaron Rodgers other than us jumping to the he doesn't seem to care about football narrative. But we'll also talk about Dallas. I don't know if you've been following what the Cowboys have been up to lately, but they're kind of a mess already heading into their week two matchup with the Chargers this weekend, which might be good news for you, my friend. The Chargers could start the season 2-0 with what the Dallas Cowboys are dealing with. First of all, Lyle Collins is out 5 games due to violation of the substance abuse policy on the offensive line. Now, they do get Zach Martin back from COVID, but on defense, it's been reported that DeMarcus Lawrence broke his foot yesterday. He could be out 6 to 8 weeks, and their other edge rusher, Randy Gregory, could be out this weekend due to COVID. Michael Gallup is on the injured reserve. It's already starting to be a mess. But as long as they've got Dak Prescott, things should be okay for the Cowboys. You'll weather the storm in other areas because Prescott gives you a chance to win. But they got to get the running game going. Tony Pollard had a better game than Ezekiel Elliott in their game against Tampa. They were going up against one of the best run defenses in the NFL. But still, it's a little bit alarming that of the two running backs, Tony Pollard got a little bit more success than Ezekiel Elliott. So we'll talk to Russell about that coming up as well. And going into some of these games, including tonight, we got Washington going up against the New York Giants. Also coming up this hour, I saw the final two episodes of the Mets documentary, and you know, I won't get into details because the last hour is game 6 and most of us know how that played out, and then it closed out with game 7 with the Mets winning the World Series. But some of the aftermath, we talked to Ken Davidoff about this, why the Mets did not win more World Series championships. They do a pretty good job of explaining why in the documentary, and I found it kind of fascinating, so we'll talk about that coming up as well. It's also Throwback Thursday. We're doing 1980s dramas because on this date in 1984, Miami Vice made its debut on NBC. But coming up next, we'll take a look more at the football weekend coming up as we continue on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
On Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Throwback Thursday, 1980s dramas, Fantasy Island with Ricardo Montalban and Hervé Villechaize. This was a pretty, this was a good show. This was an interesting premise too.
Yeah.
You could have your wishes granted and sometimes your wish wasn't really what you wanted. So it was kind of a, they also had some scary episodes. On Fantasy Island.
It was basically, moral of the story was appreciate what you have.
Appreciate what you have. You don't need to go traveling to an island to get a wish granted. There you go.
There you go.
Man. Speaking of wish granted, I wish this game tonight was a better fantasy.
Well, hey, again, maybe just enjoy what you have.
Is Saquon Barkley okay? I know. Is he okay or not? Like, what's the story with Saquon Barkley?
I don't know, right? In this aspect, I'm kind of glad I'm not doing fantasy football for the first time in a long time because
I would
probably have Saquon Barkley on my team.
I know. I'm not good at fantasy football, but I at least play it. And this year, we didn't get anything going as a station.
No.
I blame all of you down there in Houston.
I blame everyone here, too.
Nobody got something rolling along. Who was the commissioner last year?
Eitan.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. I thought it was Jake. I thought you were going to say Jake.
No.
I was ready to blame Jake.
We can blame Jake.
Why not? Let's blame Jake.
He abandoned the network, too.
I thought he was the one that put that together.
No, last year was Eitan.
I was the Nashville Hot Chickens. I thought that was a great name, given that I live in Nashville. Gamecocks, hot chicken is the meal here.
And literally everyone devoured you.
I got torn up. I got so disinterested in this thing when Michael Thomas got hurt. And I was like, I have nothing. And I could, the thing was, we had too many people in the league and there was nobody good that I could go get.
No.
I did get Chase Claypool, but that's it. It was only because you guys had the good players and didn't need Chase Claypool. You weren't willing to take a chance on him because why bother? It's not like you all had Michael Thomas.
I remember last year, I thought it was a brilliant move because I had the second pick overall, and I passed up Saquon Barkley and chose Ezekiel Elliott. And everyone thought I was a fool.
Right. Good for you.
But, you know, I mean, literally didn't really matter. Ezekiel Elliott really didn't do much, but at least he gave me more points than Saquon Barkley did in that one game that he played.
Had you taken Saquon Barkley, you would have been in the same predicament as me. That's right, which you didn't want to be in. It's people. This is the one aspect of my job that people can't believe. They're like, you stink at fantasy football? And I go, yes, I do. And I go, here's the thing. I talk to people who are good at it. I follow people who are good at it. I read about it. I study the statistics. I study the season. It's my job. And I still stink. This is inexplicable. I can't understand it. Why I'm so bad at fantasy football. I'm almost afraid to get into like little gambling. I'm almost afraid to do that.
I would never do it.
You know? Now, I don't know. Like, there's been part of me that's like, I don't want to. I see these app ads all the time, and now they're in Tennessee, and I'm like, maybe should I do it?
I've thought about, you know, like what the daily fantasy league, or you jump on.
Oh, forget it. I'd lose everything if I was in one of those things.
Yeah, or the.
I stink.
Like, you do fantasy football, but you actually can make money. I can't do it. I just can't. Well, I can't do an account.
I saw a story on this where the people who are winning a lot of money on those kind of things were people like quit their jobs. They were so good at analytics and statistics, it was almost like they were printing money. They had computer programs, like baseball, for example. They would plug in all of the necessary details of a game, and it would give them what they should play and who they should play based on statistics. And they were like, it's unfair. It's like being a professional poker player going into some card room in Helena, Montana. You know, it's like it's like what Matt Damon said. It's like, everyone else, we're sharks. We're just feasting on these people. That's what the guy was saying. The guy was like, I'm the computer's like putting out all of these amazing variables and statistics that I have that nobody else, everyone's just playing on instinct. I'm doing this statistically. And he was cleaning up. And I was like, man, not me. I would have to do it on instinct. So I think this game tonight, is it going to be good as far as football? Probably not. Is it going to be close and interesting? Maybe. You might get a good game out of this.
I think there's a real chance for it.
Like, I mean, if you just sit back and just go, hey, it's football, it's on Thursday night, these two teams aren't probably going to the playoffs if Dallas stays healthy. Yeah, sit back and enjoy. This game might be close. And Taylor Heinicke, he had a good playoff last year against Tampa Bay. Maybe he's the guy that – maybe he takes that – you know, some players – there's one famous one that gets thrusted into a starting job and makes the most of it. Maybe this is his. Happened to the Steelers. Steelers had Bubby Brister at quarterback and they got hurt. It was a Monday night game against the Giants.
Who's carrying the game? Is Fox carrying the game tonight? Don't they normally,
yes.
Or did they change it up?
Or is that NFL Network now solely?
Maybe. Yeah, here's my question. How many times are they going to mention Cam Newton?
True. That's true. You know, that's a good question.
Washington is now in need of a quarterback.
How long?
Ron Rivera once coached Cam Newton.
All right, let's do this. Over under on what week Cam Newton returns to the National Football League this year?
Four?
Week four?
Yeah.
All right. I'd probably go a little further than that, probably week six.
So you take the over on week four?
There are people who would take zero. They would say he's not at all.
No, that's very true.
I would find that hard to believe because I would be like, I think somebody would say, okay, come on board. We're beat up.
Well, here's the issue, you know, and this could, it very well easily could be a Colin Kaepernick situation. If all of a sudden you have like, you know, Ben DiNucci getting starting roles or.
Oh, right.
You know, name Luke Falk. Who were some of the quarterbacks in the past that we had to, you know, stomach?
Absolutely. They were trying to call people out of retirement before they called Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. Matt Schaub, will he be called out of retirement? Phillip Rivers, will he get a gig before Cam Newton?
Well, that's another good question. If you need a quarterback really badly, Would you call Philip Rivers before you called Cam Newton? Would you try to get Cam Newton out of retirement before you called Cam Newton?
I don't know.
I think I don't know. I kind of think I would, because I think, depending on what I run, I would probably want a more prototypical quarterback, because Cam Newton, you know, runs and does, you know, but I don't know. He's a former MVP, for crying out loud.
He is. I mean,
like, where did, how far did his stock fall? I mean, what's going on here?
Well, that's the thing, right? Is it more of like the off the field antics that are, you know, and the distraction that he causes? Is that what is keeping people away? Or is he just not a good player anymore?
That might be true. That might be true.
Because, I mean, last year, I mean, he did decent for the Patriots. I mean, he wasn't great, but, you know, the Patriots weren't a terrible team.
Right. And the other thing, too, is it didn't feel like we had these problems with Cam Newton when he went to New England. Right? Like,
yeah.
we didn't feel like he was like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? The Patriots want Cam Newton? What, are we crazy? Wow. Like, we were like, oh, he was, you know, casualty in Carolina. They're going in another direction. They you know, they're cleaning
salary
house.
Dump
it's a salary dump. He's still got some football left in him, and the Patriots get him. Like, oh, that's pretty cool. Patriots, that's pretty good. And now, today, it's teams may not call him at all.
Yeah.
If there's an opening. Like, what happened?
Is it because he cut a hole in his hat so his hair could breathe?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's very bizarre.
Is it the vaccine?
Is that it?
Is that a problem?
Is it, you know what? It doesn't seem to be a problem for, you know, Indianapolis or Minnesota,
right?
You know, or I think even Buffalo. Their starting quarterbacks came out and had no issue saying, "Hey, yeah, we're not taking it."
I agree completely.
I need to do my research on it.
So it's remarkable, and that's why if you are in this league, never take anything for granted. Sometimes it doesn't just go away. It goes away quick.
Yeah.
You.
I mean,
you
once they're done, they're done. They're washing their. Now, he's been in the league for, what, 10 years at least?
Oh, yeah. 2011, I think.
2011?
Yeah, when he got drafted.
Which isn't really saying much, because, I mean, you look around. I mean, Tom Brady's been in it for twice as long. Aaron Rodgers has been in it forever and a day. So I don't know what the issue is over there. It's very bizarre.
It is really bizarre.
But I have a feeling tonight that whoever's on the broadcast will. His name's got to come up because of the fact that Washington's in search of a quarterback or in need of a quarterback. If Heinicke is playing terrible,
they should probably bring up his name. They probably would. Because they're a team that is now needing a quarterback. Right?
Yeah.
If Taylor
and Ron Rivera is his former coach.
Yes. That's the other thing, too. Now you've got an over-under of at least 3 or 4 with that element in there. Again, if Taylor Heinicke is struggling tonight.
Yeah, or if he gets injured. I mean, who's their backup?
Right. Who is the third string guy in Washington now? Who is it? I don't know. I have to look it up. But that you're right. It's going to be mentioned a couple of times. I got to think. I think it's going to be. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the more I'm thinking about it, Ron, I'm thinking it's probably 3 or 4 times I'll bring up Cam Newton if indeed he does struggle. Yeah.
Kyle Allen.
Oh my God, really?
Isn't he the one who took Cam's job?
I was just going to say, wasn't he in Charlotte?
Oh, that would be fantastic.
This is amazing.
Please, now you got to make it happen. If I don't want Heinicke to get hurt. I just want him to suck really bad. So Kyle Allen takes his job, and then Cam Newton gets the phone call to take Kyle Allen's job.
You know what's funny? In this business, sports radio, it's really a small world. We got sports radio stations all over the country, but we all seem to know each other, or we're all like, it's like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. We're
yeah.
all pretty close. In the NFL, it must be 10 times worse.
Oh, my God.
Like, you know, it's like Cam, they're like, hey, Cam, you want to come and you back up? You're going to be backing up to Kyle Allen.
Again.
And he goes, again? Really? Oh, yeah. God, I'm working with that guy again? Ugh. Yep.
All of a sudden, all the
teams that need quarterbacks, and I got to land on the team that I just had this guy in Charlotte.
But then that one commercial pops up again.
Yeah. So
I can be as fast as you, and I can throw as you, and I can take
right?
a job. Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
Everyone thought, I literally thought too, like when everyone started saying, that's Kyle Allen, at first I was like, that's amazing that he turned it. Because you do see those stories from time to time. Like,
sure.
The kid actually becomes a professional athlete. I was like, That's incredible. And he actually took his job. And then I did the math. I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it wild? You know what's funny? That is wild when you see a picture. Like, I remember seeing a picture of Jordan Spieth as a kid getting Tiger Woods' like autograph.
Yes.
And you're thinking, like, he's a little kid. And he's at some event that Tiger Woods is at. And because he's in the golf world, he gets to kind of meet Tiger Woods. And then you're like, now they're friends.
Yeah, across the pond over in Manchester. Manchester United, you know, they recently signed Cristiano Ronaldo. A player on that team, Jesse Lingard, posted a photo. And all he said was, dreams do come true. He was at a Manchester United camp. That Cristiano Ronaldo, you know how athletes come and just do a camp for the day? That Cristiano Ronaldo was like the main focal point. And he's sitting there and he's getting like his autograph and there's, you know, a picture of those two together. Now they're teammates.
Yeah, that's wild to me. That's wild. It's like, again, with golf, it's like now you're buddies with this guy. Like you're friends.
You're competing against each other.
You're competing against each other. You're at Masters dinners together. Like, and you're, you know, do you, and would you say to, a person like, oh, I got your autograph when I was 8.
Yeah.
Would you just keep that quiet because you don't want to make them feel old?
I mean, how many people has Tom Brady played with where, you know, they're like, my dad used to tell me all about that first Super Bowl.
Yeah, right.
Because he's playing with kids who weren't alive when he started playing.
He's playing with kids who weren't alive. Exactly. Who don't remember at all when he won that first
Super Bowl. By the way, he had a great quote the other day. He's like, he's like, there's so many rookie quarterbacks or young quarterbacks. I'm used to, you know, the talk of the season is, you know, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, like naming all the retired guys.
Yeah. All the guys are not in the league anymore.
Where did they all go? I'm like, Tom Brady's getting old now. He's starting to slip.
That's awesome. Russell Baxter is going to join us in 15. We'll talk to him about week one and going into week two. We continue with Wake Up Call.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better, drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Baywatch.
Yes.
I thought Baywatch was more of a 90s thing.
It is, but it started in the late 80s, so.
There you go. Very good.
Had to include it.
I mean, Throwback Thursday, 80s TV shows.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is more known for 90s, but started in 88 or 89.
All good. Speaking of 80s, since it is a Throwback Thursday, I wrapped up Once Upon a Time in Queens last night.
Yes.
It's the four-part documentary on the Mets of the 1980s. So I watched the thing and I did that thing again where I was watching the game 6 and it was so intense. And this is 35 years ago. And it when you do it in a documentary setting, it's a little better because they talked about that inning, right? They talked about how Dave Henderson hit the home run and the Red Sox were up by 2. And then they came up and the Mets were down in the bottom of the 10th, and everybody was silent. And one of the celebrities said that when Dave Henderson hit the Newsday sign, he heard it clang. And that was the first time he realized that was made of metal because he could hear it through the TV because the stadium was so silent. Right? That ball was just drifting and drifting, and everybody was quiet. And then the Red Sox were out, and they got the first two outs of the game, and Keith Hernandez got out. And he flew out to Dave Henderson and he went into Davey Johnson's office because he did not want to see the Red Sox celebrate at all. He did not want to see it. He said he regrets it. He said he regrets that. He should have been with his team during the rally. But at one point during the rally, he felt like, I can't leave. I'm like, he was superstitious. So he stayed where he was. But every player that came up, Gary Carter, his widow was on. I almost forgot Gary Carter had passed away.
Yeah.
And that was kind of sad. But his widow said, Gary never wanted me the last out. So Gary Carter gets a base hit. And Jeff Pearlman, who wrote a book about this, about the Mets, tells the story about how Gary Carter, clean cut kid, right? The kid, clean cut, never did, you know, never strayed away, never did anything. He turns to the first base coach and he said, I'm not making the last blipping out of this World Series. Then it was Kevin Mitchell who came to the plate.
Rookie.
Kevin Mitchell, the rookie. Now, Kevin Mitchell gets called to pinch hit, and Kevin Mitchell's angry. He's angry because he's like, they're going to send me up there? I'm going to be the fall guy for this? They're going to send me up there? I'm the one that's going to go down? No, screw this. Because he had roommate, he was a roommate with Calvin Schiraldi, and he remembered how Calvin Schiraldi used to say, I know how I would pitch to you. So he remembered that, and he got a base hit. He gets to first base. He says to the first base coach, I'm not making the last beeping out of this World Series. Then Ray Knight comes up, and Ray Knight, same thing. He gets a hit. He says the exact same thing. I'm not making the last bleeping out of this World Series. And then Mookie comes up. And I kind of forgot about this because it was 35 years ago. Mookie fouled off every single pitch that came his way. The Red Sox, they calculated that the Red Sox could have won the World Series after they got the second out. The Red Sox could have won the World Series on 17 different pitches that were thrown to Mets batters during that rally. And couldn't get one. Couldn't get one strike that they needed. So they said Mookie was, you know, fouling off pitches. Everything's up. Foul, 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 foul. And by the way, Vin Scully, foul, just was awesome. Like, I really miss that guy. You know, Mookie, foul. And just like, you just could feel it. So then he's facing Bob Stanley. And they tell Kevin Mitchell. They tell him, you better be ready to go. They could tell he wasn't throwing the ball well. And he goes, this is going to get by Gedman. Be careful. Watch for this. And they predicted it. And sure enough, he throws one in the dirt. Gedman can't get it. Goes back. Mitchell comes in. Then Mookie says, at that moment, all the pressure's off. The game's tied. So he hits the ball down the line. And of course, we know what happens with Buckner. But they point out there's a couple of things here, right? They point out Buckner knew Mookie Wilson and knew Mookie Wilson was really fast. Buckner was hobbling, had bad knees. So he's trying to do two things. He has to get Mookie out. If Mookie's safe, the game's over. So even if he fields the ball, if he doesn't get to first on those bad knees and Mookie beats the play, the game's over. So all of this is going through Buckner's head as he's going to field the ball. It's like, when I field it, am I going to have time to get from point A to B? I can't run. I'm sitting duck out here. And Mookie can really cook down the baseline. And there's a couple, so that ball goes through and the Mets win. And then they show, they do that thing in documentaries that I like where you don't get just Shea Stadium. They show all different places in New York that had cameras rolling at that time. And how they were losing their minds at different restaurants, at different downtown and different places that they could get footage of people reacting. And then they talked about the champagne. They went in the champagne and brought it out. And they were like, the guy scrambling to get everything out of the locker room. They're like, they didn't want one Red Sox player to see tarp or champagne or the trophy or Bob Costas or anybody in their locker room. But the thing that got me was the celebration, the parade that they win the World Series two nights later. Doc Gooden's not there. Doc Gooden went right to a drug house hours after the game seven and was there and woke up in a drug house on Long Island while his team was celebrating on TV. And I'm telling you, Gooden talks about that in that series. It is worth a watch. 35 years later, that man is still in pain over that. That he watched on TV his team celebrate in front of two and a half million people in downtown New York City, and he was in a drug house on Long Island.
Jeez.
It was devastating. Oh, his story. You could see he was almost ready to cry. He was really, really broken up about that decision that he made. But the breakdown, they traded Ray Knight, they traded Kevin Mitchell, chemistry wasn't there anymore, teams started to fall apart. They just caught one moment where everything worked, and then baseball business got in the way of them doing more damage to the National League and to baseball. But they had that one moment. Show. Good documentary. I highly recommend it.
It's It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Throwback Thursday, 1984. Miami Vice made its debut on NBC, and we are doing 80s theme songs. Love Boat. I mean, what are we doing here? This is one of the greatest creations in all of television. Every guest star had to be on this stupid boat. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote on progressive.com today. Russell Baxter joins us. Oh, we got to talk some NFL. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I know you're doing 80s, but you do realize the greatest TV theme song ever is Cool 95 Up.
Which is what? What'd you say?
The greatest is Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, of course. Of course. Without question. Absolutely.
By the way, second place is F Troop.
I think I mentioned F Troop one time on the show. Because
anytime you can get in a lyric that says "all turned chicken," you have a hit.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. All right, so Russell, I've been waiting for all this whole time to get your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and the performance against the Saints. Is there an X's and O's reason for this, or because people are immediately going to the "he seems to not care anymore" card?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, there are doctors across the country that get paid to talk to people in person about what's going on with them psychologically, but through the magic of Facebook and Twitter and TV, you know, apparently everybody knows everything about everybody.
Yeah.
Because they read into body language, and they read into press conferences, and they read into what Aaron Rodgers looks like right now. But he's right. I mean, what did Aaron Rodgers coin in terms of a phrase a couple of years ago?
Yeah, relax. Yeah.
It's exactly what he said, okay? He said relax. So, relax. I mean, are you expecting anything other than that from him when it comes to a loss, okay? So I think people are, what they're doing is their season, which obviously was not a good look for him or the Packers. A 38-3 loss to a team that's got a brand new quarterback, even though Jameis Winston has done his thing for a number of years. I know he's thrown a lot of picks, but he can also sling the ball. Green Bay's defense is still a question mark. But the fact that they scored only a field goal, you know what was really funny about this first week, Tony? The two highest scoring teams in the league last year were Green Bay and Buffalo. They totaled one touchdown between the two of them.
Good point.
Okay, both of them scored over 500 points last year. They rung up a whole total of 19 in 8 quarters. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen. We saw a Super Bowl champion lose its opener last year when New Orleans beat Tampa Bay at the Superdome. We have seen teams stink it up. Do you remember, this is going back a while, it's almost 20 years ago, 2003, the New England Patriots decide to cut Lawyer Malloy about a week before the season opener at Buffalo.
Yeah.
They lost 31-0.
I was just going to say they got shut out at Buffalo, right?
Yeah, they lost 31-0 at Buffalo. Do you know what they did week 17? They beat Buffalo 31-0 in Foxborough and then went on and won their second Super Bowl.
Yeah. So, again, I think people kind of look at this. I think overreaction seems to be what we like to do with these kind of things. But that being said, what do you make of Jameis Winston on the flip side throwing 5 touchdowns? It's hard to be the guy that follows the guy, and he did it great.
Yeah, he did. And they got balanced. The running game, New Orleans still has a solid offensive line. Their defense last year was down, then up, and then down. And, you know, Sean Payton's team is pretty good at taking care of the football. If anything, Jameis Winston learned in his year there. Before, I mean, remember, it was funny. Remember, he threw a touchdown pass in the playoff game against Tampa Bay off that
That's right.
play. Okay, so if there's anything he learned from the Saints, watching them as a divisional rival, and that's the thing, too. He not only had the benefit of joining the team, he faced the Saints for 5 years. Well, 5 years? Let me see. 4 years. Okay? So he saw what they did. Some people forget a couple of years ago, New Orleans set an NFL record in the season. They had 8 in a 16-game season, which was 2 fewer than the previous record, which was 10. So taking care of the football, listen, Sean Payton knows that from Bill Parcells and all the other coaches. He's have to force the football when he has balance. I mean, you know, early in his career, he showed what he could do. But that turnover, and the thing that I always look at, it's not just interceptions, Tony, it's fumbles. I think, I want to say Jameis has fumbled 50 times six seasons. He actually played for the Buccaneers for five. I'm correcting myself and so on. But okay. He had like 50 fumbles and lost 23 of them in 5 years with the Buccaneers. He had 111 turnovers in five seasons.
Wow.
Okay? There are bakeries that don't have that kind of turnover production. Okay? So you go into a different system. You get a learning experience and so on. Look at Matthew Stafford the other day against the Bears. And the Bears' defense was horrendous, don't get me wrong. But that, you know, changes scenery, different system, not having to be the person who carries the team. You know, it's still beyond me that we have so many people who talk about quarterbacks winning games and so on. And every year we get proof that it's not just about the quarterback. That's why in 55 years of the Super Bowl, we still yet to see a quarterback lead the NFL in passing yards and win the Super Bowl the same season.
Right. When you look at this, the week one, when you look at what happened in week one, there were some teams that had these higher expectations that had a couple of things go wrong for them that are fixable. But when I look at the Tennessee Titans, that offensive line with Taylor Lewan, I don't know if that's fixable. Is that going to be a problem for them?
Well, here's the thing. Their offensive line is supposed to be one of their strong suits.
Right.
The problem with the Titans last year was their defense. No team that made the playoffs last year, Tony, gave up more points than the Titans. I want to say they scored 491 and gave up 429, something like that. Couldn't stop Lamar Jackson from running the football in the playoff game at home. And defensively, and listen, Chandler Jones, five sacks. I mean, Chandler Jones had a rough year last year. Only played more than made up for that last week, and we know what he is definitely capable of. And if you don't think having J.J. Watt on the other side to preoccupy people doesn't help,
without question.
I mean, listen, people can say about J.J. Watt the last couple of years with his injuries and so on. I believe he played all 16 games last year. He's not going to have the production that he used to, but boy, he can still do a lot of things. There's no question about it. But Tennessee's problem was defense. And they went out and they had 19 sacks last year. Went out and got D'Amico Autry. Went out and got Bud Dupree. But they didn't show really that much against the Cardinals' offensive line. And Arizona played with an amazing amount of confidence in that game. And, you know, that was the concern with Tennessee. Could they play defense? If you think about that division last year, Tony, only the Colts had the semblance of a good defense.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good. Tennessee, Jacksonville, and Houston were horrendous on the defensive side of the ball. Now, after Sunday, of course, not one of those teams in the division looked like they could play much of defense. Maybe, I guess, Houston, who gave up a late touchdown and 21 points and so on. But Russell Wilson bombed the Colts. Jacksonville couldn't stop the run. Jacksonville was terrible in defense last year anyway. So what's going to be interesting this year, and I actually just did a key stats piece for Full Press Coverage, is, you know, now that we have a 17-game season, are we going to have some of these old stats about 0-1 and 0-2 go by the wayside with that extra regular season game, and now that we have 14 teams in the playoffs, which was the case last year anyway?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. We've been talking about this all off season, which is I don't know how to look at a 17-game schedule. It seems like it's just one game, but it really is a lot more than just that.
Well, it also depends on who you're playing, okay?
Yeah.
If you are interconference games are great. These teams only see each other every 4 years for the most part, and we have more interconference games this year with the 17-game season and so on. But when you look at divisional games and conference games against teams that you think are going to be in the playoffs as well, Kansas City and Cleveland. If they tie, the Chiefs have the tiebreaker. If Buffalo and Pittsburgh tie, Pittsburgh has the tiebreaker. Okay? I think anytime you can get a road divisional win, that's always very big. You think about what Miami did last week. They actually beat New England in New England for the second time in 30 years the other day. By the way,
You want to talk about the division that'll blow you away? Miami was not only the only team to win in the AFC East last week, the entire division scored 63 points.
Wow.
Miami led the way, Tony, with 17.
Well, what did you think of Mac Jones, by the way, while we're on the division? What did you think of him, his first game as a starter?
He looked like a professional quarterback. He was very efficient. They had balanced offense. They got a couple of fumbles from their running backs, including the crucial one by Damian Harris. And that's what Miami does now under Brian Flores, who led the league in takeaways last year. It was Miami. They had 29 takeaways. It's something you can move the ball on Miami, but they force you into mistakes eventually. And that, you know, that's always been a Bill Belichick thing, you know, Ben. But now, when the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2001, and I know that's 20 years ago, that first Super Bowl team, Tony, they were 24th in the NFL in total defense. They were sixth in points allowed. What does that tell you?
Yeah. All right, let's go to Cleveland, and they lost to Kansas City. But Russell, when you saw the Browns, do you think they said, well, we're still not Kansas City good, or do you feel like they said, we're getting close to being Kansas City good?
I think they felt they were getting, quote-unquote, close to Kansas City good when they went in last year and gave the Chiefs all they could handle. Now you take a closer look at that game, Patrick Mahomes missed the last quarter and a half, and right. Kansas City still managed to roll up over 400 yards, which is what they did in the offseason, getting the defensive help that they did, especially in the secondary with John Johnson III and Troy Hill, who they got from the Rams and so on, and Greg Newsom was the first-round draft pick. And what did Tyreek Hill do to them? 197 yards. Okay? Didn't it remind you of Tyreek Hill getting 200 yards in the first quarter against
sure.
the Chiefs?
Absolutely.
Okay? So there were little things that went wrong. They wound up with three turnovers. Nick Chubb had a fumble, I think, early in the second half. People pointing to the Baker Mayfield interception when I think he was trying to make a play, and I still don't know if he was trying to throw away the football, force the football. But I haven't heard a lot about midway through the third quarter the punter fumbling the ball and giving Kansas City an easy short field in which they took the lead. So, I mean, I know we like to point at the quarterbacks and so on, but three turnovers is three turnovers, and when you give the ball to Patrick Mahomes in point-blank range like that, I don't think enough gets said about that play. Listen, this is a game of ups and downs, making plays and not making plays. You know, Monday night, Derek Carr made the great pass in overtime to Zay Jones. What did he do earlier in the overtime? He threw a pick in the end zone.
Yeah. Russell, always good talking to you, my friend. We got to do it again soon, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Do you have any music from My Mother, the Car?
My Mother, the Car. All right. Well, Ron will find it. He's good at that kind of thing. My Mother, the Car. Excellent stuff.
Ron is like the Dick Clark of TVC music.
He is. I do. He could absolutely find it. Okay. Russell, good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Keep reaching for the stars.
Russell Baxter on the NFL as we continue. All right. My Mother, the Car. What was that, 70s? Is he going 80s? Going 60s on us? I mean, I think he's going that far back. All right, we'll come back. We'll wrap up this hour and get ready for Denton Day coming up on Sports Map Radio.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
I think you waited until the last one to do this one.
On purpose.
I think you did. It's our Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
And all due respect to Russell Baxter, this is the greatest 80s TV song.
I know, right? Come on. I know we did a bit on this before, but it's still an amazing concept for a show.
Incredible.
A teacher gets an FBI agent solving crimes because he got a super suit from aliens, but he lost the manual and didn't know what the suit did, including he didn't know how to fly. Seeing so William Catt wailing his arms in front of a green screen or whatever it was back in the day, wailing his arms, flying.
I looked it up. Here's the list on Wikipedia. Ralph's uniform grants him the powers of flight, super strength, invulnerability, invisibility, precognition, telekinesis, X-ray vision, super speed, pyrokinesis, shrinking,
jeez,
psychometry, which is holographic vision, and even the ability to detect the supernatural. But he doesn't have the instruction manual, and most of the time, it always came as a surprise to him.
Yeah, like he would be, they would go, Ralph, you're invisible. And he's like, what? And then they would say, this is what the suit must be able to do. And then then the whole episode would be him utilizing that power. Right? I remember one episode, he made a roulette ball bounce into the right slot. Didn't know he could do that. And then yep. He figured out he could do that. God, where's the creativity in television today? They try, but they don't land. They don't land the home run with just the, you know.
Just, I mean, it was simple.
Like, think about it. The 80s, we had Superman that didn't have a instruction manual for his suit. We had a talking car.
Yep.
We had a rogue group of military criminals that were innocent but solved crimes and helped people.
A guy who made bombs out of anything.
Anything. Could make a bomb out of anything. Just give him three things and he can make a bomb. Like the creative talents of the writers.
How about this one? How about a guy who solved crime who was a stuntman?
Oh, that's right.
We didn't even do that show. Fall Guy.
He was a stuntman, but somehow he ended up solving crimes. Because it didn't matter what profession you were in, you could solve crimes.
60-year-old author.
That's right. 60-year-old author. Denton Day is coming up next. It's Fort Matt Ruby. We'll see you tomorrow.